Hello and welcome to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. I'm Kelly Taylor. Do you drink kombucha? The trendy fermented beverage used to be just found in health food stores, and now it's really everywhere you look. There are a lot of health claims online about kombucha, that it can cure this or that. It's, you know, the magical elixir of life. But is it just hype? I invited Andrew Thomas, who is responsible for marketing kombucha and other probiotic drinks to the masses. He's the director of marketing for Kavita, which is becoming a giant company and slowly infiltrating grocery and convenience stores everywhere. His job is an interesting one in itself when it comes to how to market this kind of product to people beyond those who are super health conscious. As a kombucha drinker myself, I learned a lot, and I hope you do too. Enjoy.
From the Fox 11 studios in Los Angeles, California, it's the Olympic and Bundy podcast with host Kelly Taylor.
So, Andrew, you're from Arizona?
I am.
How long have you been in Southern California?
About 9 years now in total.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did a stint for 3 years, 2003 to 2006. 2008, where I went to business school at UCLA. Then I moved to Minnesota for 4 years to work for General Mills.
Oh, that's based in Minnesota?
Yeah.
How was that?
It was extremely cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet.
It's brutal, especially for someone from Arizona and then lived in SoCal.
Yeah.
Took a while to get used to it, but then moved back out to Los Angeles and have been here ever since.
What did you do for General Mills?
I worked on Hamburger Helper, Pillsbury, and then Cocoa Puffs and Reese's Puff cereals.
Yum.
Yeah.
I like that. So you've been working in food and beverage.
Yeah, almost 10 years now.
The whole time you've like stayed in that.
Yeah.
Industry.
Absolutely.
Oh, wait, I thought I saw, did you work for Think Thin?
I did.
We have those bars in our break room.
That's great.
The protein bars?
Protein bars, yeah.
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 Pretty good. I like them. So how did you get, were you always a drinking kombucha, or did that start once you kind of became aware of Kavita?
More so when I became aware of Kavita, although I first learned about kombucha when I started working for Palm Wonderful. So that was the first job I took moving back to Los Angeles. And so that being in the super premium juice category, along with brands like Naked, Odwalla, Bold House, GT's kombucha was in the same case at the time. And that was basically the only kombucha. And so I tried it. And at the time I was like, no, this stuff is not for me. But I didn't know much about it. I didn't know any of the benefits, why people drank it. And so it wasn't until I had the Kavita opportunity pop up that I started to do more research and really get into the category.
GT's was the first thing that I had too. I feel like they were the first brand in general that kind of broke into grocery stores.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
The kombucha to me, when I first had it, because I want to say I started drinking it, I don't know, maybe in college. So I don't know, a while ago. but it was weird because it's almost like tea beer.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a mix of those two things, yeah. But then there's like floaties in it.
Yes.
Which can throw you off and like kind of scary, you know, if you never had it and then you pick it up and you're like, what is this stuff floating in my drink? Do I want this? So I almost feel like when you first see it and it might turn you off, but the more that you drink it, it's almost like an acquired taste.
Absolutely.
To where you can't get enough of it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting on the floaties. I think everyone's inclination when they pick up a beverage is to shake it up. If there's anything sediment or something sitting in there, just shake it up. You actually don't want to do that with anything that has the floaties. Texturally, it's not the most appealing. And at Kavita, we actually filter out the floaties. It's basically pellicles of cellulose, or it's a result of the fermentation process. A lot of people think that's the SCOBY. It's not the SCOBY. So you can't take that and turn it into your own kombucha. So we filter that out. So we think it's a much better drinking experience.
Gotcha. It looks like it won't freak people out, basically.
Exactly.
It's like easier to sell.
Yes.
Got it.
For sure.
Oh, interesting. That's true. Because I've had a lot of different brands of kombucha, and Kavita doesn't have that.
Yeah.
Which is something I didn't notice. Kombucha, you mentioned the SCOBY. Can we talk a little bit about how it's made? I have some home brewer friends, but it's kind of confusing because you have to ferment, but then there's also the SCOBY. So can you talk a little bit about that process?
Yeah. So, you know, the process of fermentation has actually been around for a very long time. And the kind of original intent was preservation. It's just to preserve foods, make sure they last longer. And now it's being used for things like kombucha, yogurt is some fermented cultures. Like it's really about the fermented cultures is what the fermentation is about. And the process for kombucha is you take tea, sugar, And then the bacterial culture, which is the SCOBY. So it stands for Symbiotic Colony of Bacteria and Yeast.
And it's kind of scary looking.
It is. It's some people say it looks like a mushroom. Some people say it looks like a little alien. But you put those together, and then you can seal them up in a jar or a tub, and then you basically let it ferment. And then what happens is the yeast actually consumes the sugar that's in there, and that's the process of fermentation. And fermentation generates some low level of probiotics, but also generates things like organic acids, a little bit of gas, so that's where you get some of the fizziness behind it as well. But after some period of time, and it varies depending on if you're doing a homebrew or if it's at scale manufacturing, but at some point you've made the kombucha. It has all of the vinegary taste, some of the fizz, the probiotics, and a lot of the other things that people drink it for.
How long does it take, the process?
It can vary. Some people will leave it fermenting for a week or so. You can let it continue to ferment. What will happen, though, is it'll continue to change the flavor profile. And then also, if you think about what fermentation is often linked to, is alcohol production. So wine is fermented, beer is fermented. And so a lot of kombuchas actually have a low-level amount of alcohol in them, about 1.5% to 2%. Actually, anything that's fermented has some trace amounts of alcohol. Even something like soy sauce has some trace amounts.
Soy sauce.
Super minimal. Would obviously never impact you or impair you. What we do is we actually halt fermentation at the point of bottling so that we don't have any alcohol in our product. And we're actually verified non-alcoholics. We've had it tested to make sure that there isn't any alcohol in there. So it's below, I believe the threshold is below 0.05% ABV. You can claim non-alcohol, and that's where we're at.
Gotcha. Yeah, because some brands do, I've noticed, have both.
Yes.
Like, say, it'll be a different color label or something, and you could potentially seek out kombucha with a higher level of alcohol in it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because I didn't really think much about it. And I remember one time I had kombucha and it was not a mainstream brand. It was something that I just bought at a health food store and I was drinking it. And I hadn't eaten a lot that day, I think. And I felt it a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The kombucha buzz. Yeah.
There are some people who seek that out. It's interesting. We've talked to consumers about it. And I'd say largely most people aren't aware, or if they're aware, they know it's a low level amount and opinions can vary, but most people don't care all that much. I think, our stance on it is when you talk to the retailers and how they're selling it in, they want to make sure they're selling something that's non-alcoholic in the non-alcoholic part of the store.
Yeah, they have to follow rules and regulations.
Absolutely.
And according to the state.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. It's not, obviously it's not something that you would drink and then all of a sudden you are just hammered.
Exactly.
It's just the kombucha buzz. I like it. You mentioned probiotics.
Yes.
That's a result of the fermentation.
It is, but only actually in minimal amounts. What's interesting is kombucha has a reputation as being a probiotic beverage, and I think there's a couple of reasons for that. I think one, consumers will link probiotics to digestive health. Yeah. And then people have traditionally consumed kombucha for similar reasons, even though the science behind that is not as substantiated. So I think that linkage there's a little bit of overlap. But the second thing is we've actually been adding probiotics to our product at the end of the manufacturing process. And we add enough probiotics for it to actually confer the benefit that you would like to get from probiotics. And there's a handful of other manufacturers that do that as well. And so it's communicated on label, it's communicated through things like marketing communications, social media. And so that's why it has that linkage to probiotics now, because the people who have been making it actually add a certain amount in after it's been made.
Do you think that did they add probiotics as a way to further sell the product? Or do you know what I mean? Was there a reason at first why people added that?
I think that's always going to be part of the reason. I think another part is that because it naturally does generate some probiotics, it's just not enough to confer that health benefit. So the way you measure probiotics is, and this gets a little sciencey, but it's CFUs, so colony-forming units. And so if you were to go buy a probiotic supplement at the store, you would see numbers like 30 billion CFUs, 50 billion CFUs. And so folks who are seeking out probiotics are looking for those numbers. And that, you know, there's different, depending on the strain, depending on the benefit, you need a minimum amount, but the minimum amount is always going to be in the billions. And kombucha fermentation on its own doesn't generate that quantity. And then even when it does generate some quantity, they tend to die out over time because it's live probiotics.
Right.
Even the stuff that we add in at the end of our manufacturing process, over the course of the shelf life, you experience some degradation of that amount. So the way we communicate it now is we say there are billions of live probiotics in every bottle of Kavita, because at the end of the shelf life, it's a different number than what it was at the beginning.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And when you say live probiotics, that's live good bacteria.
Absolutely. Live
right?
cultures, yes.
There's a lot of chatter about gut health. Mm-hmm. I think you mentioned digestive health. Why, in general, do you feel like people... I mean, if for someone who isn't aware of how they should treat their gut, mm-hmm. why is that a thing? I mean, what does that do for you?
So 70% of your immune system is located in your gut, in your digestive tract. So the thought is that if you get that microbiome, if you get that in order, then it impacts a lot of different elements of your body, including your immune health. Now, the direct link between probiotics and immune health is still yet to be established. But what probiotics have shown, at least the strains that we use, is that it may confer some sort of digestive benefit, at least in terms of helping the uptake of nutrients being absorbed into the body. It's important to note with probiotics, there are so many strains. If you think about it, it's bacteria.
And they all have these crazy names.
Yes. Lactobacillus coagulans or something along those lines.
Yeah,
or,
you know. I see that right here on the label.
Yeah.
Very good. There's so many. And it's interesting. Kombucha, I don't know if you feel this way as well, but it generally has a lower amount of sugar, but it tastes sweet.
Yeah. So the natural fermentation process requires some sugar. That's what the yeast needs to consume in order to ferment. So all kombucha is naturally going to have some trace amounts of it because it's used it. I think most manufacturers add some level of sweetener to help the palatability because on its own, it is a very bold, vinegar forward taste and flavor profile. As you mentioned earlier, it's a bit of an acquired taste.
Yeah.
And so adding a little bit of sweetness and then all the flavors you see across the category just makes it a more pleasurable drinking experience.
Gotcha. Oh, yeah. I see stevia leaf extract. Yeah.
Now what you're holding there is actually not a kombucha.
Oh, hello.
Yep.
Okay.
That is one of our apple cider vinegar tonics. And so the thing about Kavita is while we're obviously very happy to be in the kombucha category and our kombucha product is doing very well, Kavita actually got its start with the sparkling probiotic drink that is a different fermented culture. So it's made from kefir crystals, and you may or may not have heard of like a dairy kefir.
Yeah, kefir, it looks like yogurt.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
And what our founder, one of our founders, Chaka Earthsong, managed to do was find a way to ferment the kefir in a water medium versus a dairy medium. And she created this really nice, like smooth, great mouthfeel fermented culture that when we pair with the sparkling water and certain flavors and a little bit of a sweetener, it's a very light and refreshing beverage. And for people who are just starting to get into fermented cultures and probiotic beverages, it's a little more approachable than kombucha just because it's lighter and more refreshing.
Got it. Yeah, it's kind of like a LaCroix kind of thing, but with... a little more flavor and probiotics.
Exactly.
Oh, interesting. Actually, yeah, I've had this one with the cayenne pepper.
Yeah, the lemon ginger is actually the original flavor that Chakra developed.
The OG.
The OG, absolutely. Yeah, and the great thing about these fermented cultures is that we still use, from a manufacturing and fermentation perspective, the original ferment. It's the original water
kefir original
ferment.
Is that like the SCOBY, but for that?
Different. Yeah, it's the same idea. It's the ferment, it's the culture, it's the bacterial culture. So in a way, it is the SCOBY, but yes, it's...
the original one?
Yeah, this stuff propagates and reproduces like bacteria does. And as long as you're doing it in an environment that's high quality assurance, certified, well-supervised, you can maintain the integrity and the good side of the bacteria without letting it... go south.
Wow. So then did the person you mentioned who first started this mm-hmm. drink, were they Do you, out of curiosity, do you know why they did? I mean, were they already kind of consuming kefir in yogurt?
Yeah.
Or
yeah, Chakra had been fermenting foods and all sorts of stuff for decades. And so she was living in Ojai, California, and created this ferment, did the first bottle, started doing more bottles, and then realized that there was something there because it was so delicious, it was so approachable, and it conferred a lot of those probiotic elements that people are seeking out, as well as, you know, it's a fermented culture, which improves some of that mouthfeel as well. And Kavita was launched in concert with a friend of hers, Bill Moses, who used to work on Wall Street. He moved out to Ojai, and he actually owns an organic winery there. And so they teamed
up. Whoa, he went from Wall Street to opening a winery?
Absolutely. Yeah, nice. Yeah. And he's now actually somewhat of a serial entrepreneur. But some of his fermentation knowledge, as well as just his business knowledge, meant that they were a great pairing. And so Kavita was launched, late 2009, really started to hit the marketplace in 2010. And the sparkling probiotic drink was really the only product that the brand had up until 2014.
And that's when you guys started doing the kombucha.
The kombucha. So we launched the Master Brew Kombucha in 2014, as well as I mentioned previously, the apple cider vinegar tonic. Now, the tonic is actually the same base. It's the same water kefir culture. And then we add 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar per bottle. And it's a different flavor profile. You know, a lot of people will take 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar, sometimes first thing in the morning, sometimes before they go to bed at night. Interestingly enough, the science on apple cider vinegar is even further behind than it is on probiotics and kombucha. There's, you know, not a lot you can say in terms of what the benefits are. But because it's seen as an age-old elixir, something grandma might have given you, people take those 2 tablespoons. And so this is a palatable way to get the 2 tablespoons, but also in a very delicious, approachable beverage. So that was launched in 2014 as well. It's not quite as large from a business perspective as the other two. Part of that is because it's ahead of its time. It was really the first sparkling drinking vinegar in the market.
The apple cider vinegar.
Yeah, it hasn't been really until the last year that you've seen some new entrants in that particular space.
It's funny. If you go on Pinterest, there are so many apple cider vinegar elixirs, morning detox kind of recipes.
Yeah.
So Pinterest, they're on it.
They are.
Apparently. interesting. So let me rehash this. This probiotic drink has kefir.
That's correct. A water kefir culture.
The kombucha, though, is coming from the SCOBY, the yeast bacteria.
It's a kombucha culture.
Kombucha culture.
Yeah, so it's a different type of fermented culture that does use that. It's a kombucha tea culture, but it's a different kind of bacterial starter. So it has a different SCOBY, a different cultural base than what the water kefir has.
So at Kavita's manufacturing plant, do you have multiple SCOBYs or do you just have one giant SCOBY that's making, each kombucha brew?
It's actually always fun for us to do the plant tours because we feel we learn something new every time. It's an extremely complex process, and sometimes it won't go as far as saying my eyes glaze over, but it's a lot to process because it's so complex. And a lot of that's because it's a very scientific process. It's fermentation, but it's also maintaining the quality and integrity of the items that we are fermenting, not just the bacteria, but the end result. We have a large manufacturing facility, different fermentation tanks. But the different cultures and the different products are going at different times.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like the scale of Kavita versus just someone who's at home brewing kombucha is way different. Like the process, I'm sure, is
absolutely, absolutely
way bigger. So one of the reasons also why I wanted to do a podcast about kombucha is because there's probiotics have people will take probiotics for gut health. There's probiotics that we just talked about as a kombucha, but there's a lot of health claims. If you just Google kombucha health benefits, there's like so many things thrown out there. Oh, it'll cure cancer. It'll, it'll treat your IBS. I mean, it's everything.
Yeah.
But when I sort of tried to do some digging for related to kombucha other than probiotics, is there any other sort of scientific data out there about kombucha, or it's specifically if someone's going to drink it, you're going for the probiotics?
Yeah, there's emerging science on kombucha. I would say it's being more heavily researched just as the category is growing. You know, it's an ancient product. It's been around for a very long time. So you get a little bit of this mysticism in the category where in some ways consumers almost, you can say live probiotics and kind of leave it at that. They're like, I just know there's something good about
Ooh,
it.
Fancy.
It's this internal like, it's mystical properties. I really don't know what it does for me, but I'm going to keep drinking it because it makes me feel great. But, you know, we've talked about the probiotics in terms of the science side of things. What the fermentation process also generates for kombucha is something called organic acids, and that's gluconic and acetic acids. And some science has shown that organic acids can actually help reduce your body's glucose response to starch. So when you consume starch and your body converts it to glucose, it can help regulate some of that process. So there's, again, that's, we're still figuring out what exactly that means, what it results in, how it impacts digestive health, how, why people feel good after they drink it. But I would say organic acids is probably one of the next realms that's going to start to get some traction around kombucha. And the great thing about that is organic acids are actually part of the chemical or molecular structure of kombucha. So it doesn't have to, like, there's no live element of it like the probiotics. Like, probiotics are living things. The organic acids aren't a living thing, so you get the benefits of those from having that fermented culture.
Gotcha. You mentioned that it's been around for a long time.
Yes.
And I have seen a lot that it was something that was brewed in, I want to say, like 200 BC China.
Yeah.
Is that true?
I mean, that's one of those
things. Or
is
that like one of those?
Yeah, it's. I've seen different stats. I think I've seen something that says 2000 BC in Manchuria is the first recorded instance of kombucha. But yeah, it's certainly, you know, part of that, you know, Eastern medicine. It's certainly somewhere in Asia is where it originated, and didn't really make its way to the United States until probably the 80s.
The 80s?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, because, I mean, now it's super mainstream.
Absolutely.
You'll go, I used to feel like it would only be at health food stores, and then I started seeing it in bigger grocery chains.
Yeah.
A couple brands. Kavita's in all the Kroger brands, mm-hmm. from what I've noticed. Like, it's at Ralph's. But now it's like you'll go into a gas station, you'll go into Chevron or Shell, and it's in the refrigerated section.
Yeah,
like it's super mainstream now.
Yeah, it's amazing the level of traction that it's seen in the last few years. It's, you know, for it being called kombucha, people not really sure what it does. To your point about it being an acquired taste, it's been amazing to watch the progression of the category, and what we've heard from consumers is that, you know, they're already somewhere along their health and wellness journey. You know, they're trying to figure out what works, what doesn't. We like to say that, you know, our consumers are doing a little like biohacking is kind of the casual term we use to refer to it, where they're experimenting. Are they reducing dairy? If reducing dairy doesn't make them feel better, they'll add it back. They'll reduce gluten, meat. They're trying all these new things and figuring out, well, what makes me feel better? You know, it's so personal for people now. Rather than listening to experts or following some other diet, they want to figure out on their own what works. And what we've heard happens is when it comes to beverage, they'll say, all right, well, I know water's good for me. It hydrates me. It's not high calories, no calorie. I'm going to drink water while I'm on this health and wellness journey. And after a while, people get a little bored of drinking water or maybe even tea. And they say, okay, well, what's out there? What can I drink that's a little more interesting? And so they'll go to influencers in their lives, whether it's friends or family who have a little more of a healthy health and wellness lifestyle, or they'll look to influencers online and they'll find out about kombucha as a better for you beverage that is effervescent, this bold, invigorating flavor. People feel energized when they drink it and they try it. And once they're in, they're in.
They're hooked.
We've done some studies where people who have purchased kombucha in the past month of the study, 56% of them buy it 4 times a week or more, some of them daily.
4 times a week or more?
Yeah.
Which, honestly, I mean, how much It's what, like $3?
It's about $3. Our average retail price is about $3, yeah.
Wow.
Some other brands are a little higher, and you know, you can obviously go to Whole Foods. Sometimes different brands, including ourselves, will be 2 for $5, so yeah, you can find an ideal. But it's certainly a premium product, which is why it's even more fascinating to see how often people purchase it. It really becomes a part of their everyday routine. We like to say that people feel great in the moment when they drink it because of that flavor experience, but also because they know that they're doing something good for their body. And so they feel great in the long term as well. So you get a little bit of that duality behind it.
Yeah. I will say, when I'm driving home from work, I work pretty early, and then I'll drive home in the afternoon and hit that slump when you hit the traffic, uh-huh, and you're sitting in your car for like an hour. And I always get kombucha on the way home. I'm one of those people who buys it all the time because it almost gives me a little bit of an energy boost too.
Yeah.
So I can't put my finger on it, but
it's interesting to say that because there's naturally a little bit of caffeine in it because tea is the base, right?
Got it.
We actually, and one thing we do across all of our products is make sure the experience is consistent every time you drink it. So caffeine levels can vary, carbonation can vary. What we do is we make sure everything's consistently carbonated and we have a consistent amount of caffeine in our master brew kombucha. I think it's about 35 to 40 milligrams per serving. But we've asked consumers what makes them feel energized about drinking it, and people don't really mention the caffeine.
They don't.
It's the experience. It's the idea that they are doing something good for themselves. It's this psychological element of I'm drinking kombucha. They feel great just for the sheer fact that they're drinking kombucha, which is a really exciting place for us to play in.
Yeah.
Because there are the benefits that people want to talk about, but there's also this beverage enjoyment experience, which people really lock onto.
Gotcha. So maybe at first people were coming to kombucha brands because they were trying to better their diet or try to feel something was going on in their body, and maybe they just wanted to try different things that would make them feel better,
yeah,
or regulate things. But now it definitely seems like people will just buy it because they hear that it might be good for you, so they're like, oh shoot, I'll try it.
Absolutely. We look at when people use this stuff throughout the day, and it's really throughout all parts of the day. Some people pair it with meals, some people have it in the afternoon. We find it tends to drop off a little in the evening just because people want to avoid something that's going to keep them up at night.
Yeah.
But it really has very broad usage.
From a marketing standpoint, this is super interesting. I used to work for Red Bull in college, and we would give out cans of Red Bull, mm-hmm, in the car. So we would go and find new consumers. And that's, of course, focused on giving people energy.
Yeah.
Trying to find them. A lot of times we would go to college campuses and catch someone walking into a library and give them a Red Bull. And maybe we were trying to find new consumers. And then maybe they would drink the Red Bull, study in the library, and they'd be like, wow, this is amazing. I'm going to drink Red Bull all the time. So in your guys' perspective, how important is, say, social media when you're trying to market the product?
It's extremely important. I would say, you know, our two big points of focus right now are our social media as well as influencer marketing. You know, just given the state of the category, that there's a lot of brands out there making this stuff right now, but there's a lot of home brewers as well. You'll find, similar to the craft beer movement, local kombucha tap houses and breweries. So you go to a, yeah, city like Portland or Denver, or even here in LA, and people will have kombucha on tap, and they'll have their own that they might not be producing to sell in a grocery store. They might just be making it in the same way a local brewery might,
yeah,
do the same thing. So because of that, the category really is about local culture. It's the same way that craft beer is, right? People want to say, all right, here's a local beer. It's made down the street. It's not necessarily mass produced. And, you know, we want to be cognizant of that people still like feeling that kind of close touch to kombucha. And it's really tough to achieve that one-on-one connection through something like TV or radio advertising, right?
Yeah.
Social media enables that one-to-one connection. Influencers do the same. Influencers are just more credible and more authentic because they're going to talk about the things that make them feel better and what's part of their routine. So that's what we tend to hone in on quite a bit, just because it allows that conversation.
Gotcha. And out of curiosity, when you say influencers, are those people who are already involved in kind of the health industry?
Usually it's sometimes it can be health and wellness professionals, but sometimes it's people who are yogis, people who have a little bit of a following just by the fact they're living a lifestyle of health and wellness. And people say, well, what are you doing? Like, how are you staying fit? What are the foods and beverages that you're consuming? So they might not necessarily be experts or certified professionals, but they're still relied upon to give that sort of advice.
Wow. In marketing, your job has probably changed a lot. With that.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. Like, I imagine when you were at General Mills, you maybe in what year did you say, 2009?
2008 to 2012. Yeah.
Like, I imagine that just marketing in general has changed with what you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, influencer marketing certainly wasn't a thing when I was at General Mills, and social media was still new enough that, you know, in larger corporations, they wanted to make sure every post was reviewed, right? You didn't want to put your foot in your mouth and say something that could get you in trouble. It's certainly evolved over time. But, you know, outside of social media and influencer marketing, more of these digital means, I would say even things like event marketing and experiential are also critical for us. Being in the places where people are doing the things that they love, whether it's food and wine festivals. We found our consumers are actually huge foodies. They love pairing. They love experimentation. This fits in well with that lifestyle. Health and wellness events, fitness events, cultural events. It's another place for us to have that more personal connection, where not only can we sample, but we can educate people about a category that they might, one, not have heard of, or two, if they have, they might have some misperceptions about it.
Yeah. And I mean, just the fact that just your Kavita and GTs and some of those bigger brands are so visible now.
Absolutely.
I mean, they're in every grocery store, it seems like.
They're in a lot of grocery stores. They're in the natural channel. You can go to Costco and find sometimes our brand, sometimes some of the others. There's some restaurants who either have kombucha on tap or they're selling some of the bottles. You mentioned earlier, you're starting to see it in away from home. So convenience stores, places.
Which, like, by the way, the Chevron sells a couple, not Kavita, I don't think. It sells something else and it's like $6.
Yeah. Well, and that's the challenge with some of these other channels is, you know, we're already a premium priced product in grocery. Things in convenience stores tend to cost a little more. So, you know, to your point, something that's $3.50 in a Vons or a Ralph's, it's going to be a little pricier by the time you hit a convenience store.
For convenience.
Yes.
I'm a sucker for it. I'm a sucker for convenience. You know, I was thinking about this. Is there anyone who shouldn't drink kombucha? Like, say if you're pregnant or you have some. Is there anyone that shouldn't drink it?
Yeah, it's one of those situations where if you have concerns, you should speak to your doctor. Mm. You know, we don't really necessarily have a stance on who should and shouldn't drink it. We just recommend that people consult their own medical professionals if they have any concerns.
Yeah, if they drink some and then suddenly they're feeling a little weird.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Which flavor is your favorite?
Oh my gosh.
We have a bunch of bottles in front of us.
We do. I actually brought one in on my own, as you can see. It's one of our new flavors that we launched last fall. It's a roots beer flavor. So tastes similar to a root beer, which is a really nice, palatable and familiar flavor profile. We also have here in front of us the Pineapple Peach Master Brew Kombucha. I love that one. It's not overly sweet, but it's a really nice, well-balanced flavor. I'd have to say my favorite, though, out of all of the products we make is one of the apple cider vinegar tonics. It's a ginseng mandarin flavor.
Oh, fancy.
It is awesome. It's amazing.
Going into like the chemistry of coming up with flavors, by the way, that's crazy.
Oh, yeah. Flavor development in any food and beverage product is fascinating, especially here. Because you want to make sure it's interesting enough and it's different enough, but not too different where people don't know what it is they're about to drink. And in this category, because it's a little more nutrition forward, you know, we have the pineapple peach master brew kombucha, but the tonic is turmeric ginger.
You guys have a lot of ginger.
Yes. Ginger is a little bit of a category convention within kombucha and fermented beverages. You'll find a lot of ginger flavors across all brands.
Because ginger helps with inflammation, doesn't it?
There's a lot of purported benefits for ginger. Similarly,
So they say.
Yeah, that's not something that we've researched on our own, and the quantities within our product wouldn't confer those benefits. But, you know, ginger has a bold flavor, and I think because people do associate it a little bit with some of those functional elements, that's my guess for why it's associated with the category.
This might be an out there question, but could you take the elements of kombucha and make a food?
You can make fermented cultures. Uh-huh. You can turn into a food. So like sauerkraut, kimchi, those are fermented foods. You could theoretically make like fermented foods into other like snackable items.
Yeah.
There's some like sauerkraut chips out there. There's some sauerkraut jerky. So you can certainly turn it into food. The elements of kombucha, I don't know for sure, but less so than other things that are fermented.
Gotcha. Yeah. You can make like popsicles with kombucha.
You know, it's funny you say that. We've definitely done some like frozen slushy recipes on social media.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. A lot of bars have like cocktails too. Like they'll mix in kombucha. In my opinion, is pretty good with like a liquor.
Yeah. A lot of people do it from a mixing standpoint, and we've also found that people will bring kombucha to social occasions where they don't want to drink. Because they don't want to have to rely on just having water or something uninteresting. They'll have the kombucha because it, you know, they're holding something in their hands.
Yeah.
It has that kind of brewed element or perception to it. And it's something that they enjoy drinking.
Yeah, that's a good point. I bet there's going to be so many bars with kombucha on tap moving. I mean, I've been to a bunch just in LA, and I'm sure that that's going to be a huge thing.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Huh. Interesting. Okay. Well, this is good. I feel like you must have had to have learned so much, by the way, when you got this job, because there's a lot involved in making kombucha and like the science behind probiotics. And I mean, just the fact that you knew some of these bacteria words, like I can't even pronounce some of these.
Yeah. Yeah. What's it?
Bacillus
coagulans.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think Lactobacillus plantarum is the other one on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bingo.
You know, it's funny because as I mentioned earlier, got my start at General Mills on Hamburger Helper.
Oh, yeah.
Living in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And
are you a Vikings fan?
I was rooting for them the other day. It's hard not to after that win.
That's crazy.
But, you know, I loved the product. I think to be a good consumer marketer, you have to truly immerse yourself in the brand and the consumer and have that empathy for how it solves a tension or a need state in their lives. But looking back at, you know, 2008, Andrew, I think, man, if that guy would have seen me today drinking kombucha, selling kombucha, living on the west side of Los Angeles, knowing about the bacterial strains, the probiotic strains, I think he would have been a little surprised. But it's been a great journey, and it has required a lot of education, and I learned something new every day about the science of it.
Yeah. Were you into science? Like, were you a good student?
I was a good student, less interested in the science side of things traditionally. It's interesting because as much as I've learned about this product, the people who actually guide and lead the fermentation at our plant, I mean, they're just lights out smart. Their ability to direct the fermentation where they want it is something I could never even hope to understand. But that's one of the really magical parts about Kavita, is that our fermented cultures, we feel, are better than anything else in the market. You know, I mentioned the organic acids earlier. Our product has 10 to 20 times more organic acids than any other kombucha in the marketplace. So as consumers start to understand more about what that stuff is and what the benefits are, you know, we have a distinct advantage in terms of our product offering or conferring more of those elements.
Yeah. So from your perspective, to sell it, you really have to know.
You do.
The difference in Kavita versus other brands, and just in general, like why do these acids matter? And how can I explain this to the general public who is not a fermentation scientist and knows this stuff?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest challenges of my job, but also one of the most interesting. It's the balance between talking about lifestyle and talking about function. You know, you don't want to get too sciencey with your messaging, because at the end of the day, this is a beverage that people are drinking. It needs to taste good and they need to enjoy it. But you also don't want to go the other direction and just talk about taste, just talk about effervescence, because there are some real parts of this product that are good for you and that people will want to know about. So we're constantly figuring out where's that line, what's that balance. It's the great part about digital media is you can test and learn quite a bit. Mm-hmm. You can figure out what works with consumers and what doesn't. And because we have that opportunity to have that conversation with them on a real-time, ongoing basis, as consumers start to be more open to something like organic acids, then we can add that to our communication plan.
Yeah. If you just ask a random person on the street, what's the deal with organic acids?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. We've asked in some research and people say, acids. I don't want to drink acids. Yeah. Why would I want to do that? So the category is not quite there yet.
Yeah. Well, 2018. That's your goal.
We'll see.
Did you guys hear about the story of there was an actor who was running like a kombucha kind of thing, operating thing out of, it was like a kombucha cult, I want to say.
I have not heard of
this. And it got shut down. Shoot, I can't think of the actor's name. He was in like a 90s show. I can't think of it now. I'll have to tell you about it. I'll have to Google it. But they got shut down. It was like a, they called it, it was in headlines. It was like, oh, kombucha cult shut down in Venice or something, of course, probably Venice.
Yeah.
hold on. I got to pull this up real quick. Kombucha.
That's fascinating.
Cult Venice. It was basically like the most Los Angeles thing to ever happen. Hold on. Andrew Keegan. Do you know him?
I don't.
I'll show you a picture. So basically these people, they called it a spiritual center in Venice, but he's an actor. And it was the main thing of the center was the kombucha that they were brewing. And I guess, I don't know, you know, you can't necessarily sell things out of a place that, you know, there's regulations.
Oh, I see. Yeah. That's the tricky part, right? If you're home brewing it for yourself, I would assume that's probably okay. You start selling it and you're not a commercial enterprise. I would imagine that might run afoul of certain regulations.
Yeah, that's a no-no. But anyways, all of the headlines were Andrew Keegan's kombucha cult shut down by the feds, or, you know, whatever it was. It's good.
That's funny.
All right, cool. Well, thank you very much
for coming in.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Thank you for spewing the kombucha knowledge.
Anytime.
And I'm going to drink this tonic.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
Perfect. Thank you for listening to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. If you have a Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram account, follow our show at Olympic and Bundy. And please give a rating and review if you're enjoying the podcast. Next week is a former boy bander turned almost astronaut in space, turned actor, turned TV host, and more. The guy's done it all. So look forward to that. I'm Kelly Taylor, and thanks again for listening.